I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Jackie Ellis. Welcome, Jackie.
Hello, Michael. How are you today?
I'm really well.
Yeah.
And here you are in Fremantle.
Beautiful day. Magic.
It's wonderful
to be here.
Yeah. Have you been for a swim this morning?
Not yet. Oh, that's a good idea. We should go.
And you've got to know Bathers Beach.
Yes. There's a magnificent place there, Kittigo Art House. I guess the locals will know about it, but I've only just discovered it, so I'm pretty excited.
Yes. Well, it has a fascinating history. Mm. I was just speaking with Joanna Robertson yesterday. She's just won a City of Fremantle Citizenship Award for all the events she runs there over the last 16, 17 years. Mm. Before her, Kittigo was, going back not so many years, the place where Joan Campbell, a noted famous West Australian potter, had her studio. And before that, back in the very early days, Kittigo was actually like a kerosene, hazardous chemicals place where things got stored in the earlier days of the colony. So it's only natural it should be a place for artists, and you're going to open an exhibition there.
Yeah, yes, I am actually. I've been very fortunate to have a little spot there for 2 weeks, from February the 8th through to February the 19th. And we're going to be there every day from 11 to 4, so if anyone can spare the time, it's a magnificent spot. Come on down and have a look.
Have a swim, come in and meet Jackie.
Yes.
Get something to eat over at the Fremantle Fishing Boat Harbour or Beach House somewhere nearby.
Exactly.
Wandered up High Street. And so you live on water, so you're going to be exhibiting near water, but you live on water.
Yes, look, it's a long story. When I was a little kid, I wrote in my journal that I wanted to be an artist, right? I wanted to walk on water, and I wanted to meet the Magic Castle too. And then about 10 years ago, I said to my husband, we were planning a house that hasn't yet been built, but I want, you know those cow sheds that rotate? I wanted a rotating house and I wanted a water garden. Well, one of the things that a life in the arts has afforded me is creative thinking. So instead of trying to put all that together, we bought a houseboat. And we have the elements of it, and we live on the mighty Ord River up in the Kimberley on a houseboat.
And the houseboat's on Lake Kununurra.
Yes.
Kununurra, what a wonderful place. People don't know that Kununurra exists. We shouldn't tell them.
Well, it's this really big country. I know you've been there, but West Australia is magnificent, but this is one of the absolute jewels in the crown. But it does sort of have that link to Fremantle, in that you've got these, you know, magnificent waterways and fabulous community is based around that.
Yeah, colours are magnificent.
The colours are incredible, yes.
And you draw these colours into your painting, do you not?
Yes, I'm very inspired. So one of the reasons why I wanted to live on a houseboat, wanted to live on the Ord, is because I have a huge affiliation to nature. You know, I was born in Kenya in Nakuru, and my father was a forester, which meant that we didn't live in the city. We grew up in the very remote backcountry where there's forests, obviously, where you can plant and grow trees. And my parents, being Kiwis, spent most of their time that they had free on safari. So I have this idyllic childhood. I have this wonderful sense that we should get some friends together and go out into nature and have an adventure. And if I've got my art there, it's pretty perfect. So.
And this is really what you're doing. You're having an adventure.
Yeah, so we've crafted a life around that. So it's, and the Kimberley affords you to have that.
Now, from what you said earlier, it sounds like the idea of being an artist was something that has been with you for a long time.
I don't actually think being an artist is what I do. I think it's more who I am, as in as much as I did not choose to be an artist. So from the very beginning, I was a very crybaby. If I was quiet for any length of time, Mum had to come and have a check out what I'd just splattered, smeared, or scraped things all over. So whether it was my cot, her couch, or the wallpaper, I was always making a mess with whatever I could get my hands on.
You're doing a Jackson Pollock on the wallpaper.
I was Jackson Pollock. So 0 to 5 was my mark-making phase, Michael. Yeah. But no, it's always been there.
Did your parents encourage you? Not every parent does encourage their, you know, their tennis champion child or their, you know, medically inspired kid. Were your parents creative? Did they encourage you to be creative?
Well, my mother certainly is where it's all come through. Dad was a strictly stick figure drawing person under duress.
Well, that was connected to his job, probably.
Yeah. But Mum certainly is where it's come from, and she certainly has been an absolute champion. She's a very abundant person, so she has always believed in that. She's never had any fears or so forth, and has always supported and encouraged me. So I'm lucky. Dad did say at one point, when I was about, end of school, 17, 18 there, he said, art would make a wonderful mistress, but law will make a good wife. So I went into law. And at the time I wanted to go into policing, but I didn't meet the height requirements.
Well, I don't know. You're quite tall to me.
Well, your listeners can't see, but I am actually an average height woman. So at the time I applied, New Zealand police was still for 6 foot people.
Oh, really?
So yeah. My lack of stature meant I was ineligible. And I got the pip. I thought, well, that's outrageous. I'm going to go away and get a law degree, and then they can tell me I'm too short. It only took me 5 years. I got that law degree. I went back, reapplied.
And they were desperate to have somebody who had a really good brain in their head.
Well, that changed the height requirement.
And
they?
The height requirement.
And I was now eligible. So I got in. But I got in with a law degree, and that, you know, even though I did start the career as a uniformed officer, I did end up doing district court prosecutions. So I did use that education.
So how long did you spend in Africa, mainly in Kenya, was it?
In Kenya, but my father, being a forester, worked on ag projects his whole life. So we were in Kenya until I was about 5, and then back to New Zealand, and then to Malaysia, and then back to New Zealand for formal schooling. But my father still worked all around the world, you know, Papua New Guinea, Philippines, Indonesia, Nepal, anywhere there was aid projects, he worked for the World Bank.
Mm. And did you get to visit him in those locations?
Yes, we did. And what an amazing thing, because it really opened up my world, or our worlds, and not just myself, but my sisters. And so we had this very kind of international, culturally international way of being.
I've got no doubt that the way kids are brought up and influence of their parents, but the environment in which they're living, as you're describing it, must have an impact. Imagine if you, for example, grew up as a young kid living in a hotel in an inner city place. I mean, you must have a different outlook on the way the world works, quite literally. I grew up in the country and went from town to town every 2 or 3 years. I think you learn all sorts of different skills. But are your siblings creative?
Well, one of them has gone into science and is a professor at university. She's the one we don't talk about, you know, the black sheep of the family. No, she's a marine biologist, and yeah, she's...
So you can relate that directly, I'm imagining, without knowing exactly your mother's interest, to your father and his scientific career.
Well, I see in families science and art, you always have that combination, and there is a discipline of observation which is required for both the sciences and the arts. So it doesn't surprise me to find both of them in a family.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Now, did you ever take formal art classes, or did you just keep splattering things on the wall and then on paper or canvas?
Well, I did actually, as I stated, my formal education was getting a law degree, but I did go and study the fine arts and various academies. But my most crucial, most influential education there was a mentorship with one of South Australia's eminent artists, who is Annette Bazour. She's passed, the late Annette Bazour, I should say. She was an amazing painter. She showed all around the world, big shows in New York, and represented Australia at the Venice Biennale. So she's a fabulous artist. At the end of my mentorship with her, it went so well, I ended up working on some of her fabulous canvases.
Wow.
Painted for her on her canvases.
So her school.
Yes.
And you were there.
Yes, and she's probably my biggest influence. You can see it come through now. That she's such an amazing painter. That's why I chose her, because I always knew I wanted to paint, and I wanted to paint oils.
Well, that's fascinating. So how did you discover her in order to find the mentorship?
Well, just following lines of interest and inquiry, and looking at what you love and following the process. And then, of course, you know, she was not an educator. She was a professional artist.
Mm.
So initially she turned me down and said,
teach.
No, I'm not a teacher. I'm not going to teach you. And I just...
badgered her.
Pretty, yes, exactly.
So
never given, never surrendered.
Where was she based at that point?
In Adelaide. Yes.
And you went to Adelaide?
Yes, yes, yes.
And how long did you spend with her?
2 years, but I painted for her for probably another 3 after that.
My goodness. Yes. That's fascinating. So you went to art school, but it was her art school.
It was her art school. Yes.
Were there others going through this mentorship?
Well, she didn't take anyone else on, of course. And
you must have had a very interesting relationship with her.
I was very privileged. She was a very, very private person, and... I really did make it impossible for her not to take me. I think that's how it worked.
So tell me, at about what age were you when you did that mentorship? And there's two other parts to this question. What were you painting before you took it up? And then what effect did that have on the way you paint now?
Well, because I've always painted, I did do photorealism up until about my 20s. And into law school, and I was doing photorealism. So, and I'd taken it as far as I could take it. You know, I was doing very, very tight, very, very clear, like photorealism. From about 15 was when I peaked. And then, of course, once you've perfected something, it becomes much less interesting. You step out of the challenge of it, right? And so it's no longer interesting. By the time I got to Annette Bazour, I was much more interested in, my muses then was human psychology, rivers, land, and I was seeking something. Since that mentorship, I've painted for a good another, 15 years or so. And what I'm interested in now is painting what can't be seen. So the psychological portrait of a human rather than their physical portrait. The energy lines in country, in land, where the energy flows through that land. Things like that. You know, your inner world, your dreams, your ambitions, your feelings, fleeting thoughts and fleeting feelings, and how, as you say, how your environment crafts and shapes, because it does, your environment crafts and shapes your inner world.
I don't mean to be clever, but how do you get to see what can't be seen?
Well, this is the point of the arts, isn't it? You are exploring the inner world. You are exploring energy lines. Well, we all know about energy, is right. You can't see electricity, but you can see the effect that electricity can be brought to bear. Well, you know, the energy that you have in yourself, your emotional energy, has a very similar effect, isn't it? You can't see that emotional energy, but you can always see the effect it has. So there are certain, symbols in my work that I use repeatedly. So for me, one of the most recurring symbols is the human eye. Because the human eye, you can see it, right? It is your body, but it also is a window to your mind, and it's a window to your soul, and it's how, when we want to truly connect with a person, you make that connection through the eyes. So eyes come back as a symbol for me to be able to tap into that, you know, inner world.
Where do you think that energy is being drawn from, that you identify, discover that can't be seen?
Well, again, to me, I regard nature as like the base, like the foundation. And that's why I have to be close to her, have to be in her. But I consider us to be a part. We are connected. We are from that and we belong there. And that is, so we all have energy within us. You can see, you know, when a person is vibrant, you can see it. You know, we are at our core and our most fundamental, we are energy. It's what animates us, what is life. But everything to replenish that energy, you need to have it flow through you. So it flows through you, the water you drink, the food you eat, which is why it's critical. The land you live in, the energy of those places comes into you. That's why it is influential where you live. It does matter, you know. And the condition of the land, and I think, you know, us as humans are starting to comprehend that we are so interrelated. If we have a very high level of energy that we operate at, we have a positive influence, including on the nature around us. And it kind of feeds back. So our rivers are clean, our air is clean, and then we have greater energy for it. It becomes like a, you know, a feedback system, mm-hmm. really.
No, it's really interesting and, dare I say, important to have these appreciations. When people walk into your exhibition using the naked eye,
yes,
what will they see, and is there something else that you want them eventually to see or feel?
Now, the audience, I'm glad we've got back to the people who will come, because this is really important to me. You know, my life in the arts has raised up my emotional condition, but this is where I'm putting on an exhibition. And what an exhibition is an offering to share. And when the people come, they get the opportunity. We've all had that experience, right, where you have had gone to a live music performance or a play or a show, and you've gone in and, you know, average sort of feeling, you've come out just buzzing, right? Your energy level is just zoop up. And that's the point of the arts, right? It does. It re-energizes you. Mm-hmm. And visual arts, no different. So the people, if they come, you know, come and have a look at the work, it can feed back into you. That's why I've titled the show Joy and Light. You come along and get refreshed, get replenished, get re-energized to feel that joy back into your soul, because that's really important. Now, the other thing about the audience is, again, with a live performance with an audience that feeds back in, it's an amplification process, right? So they also give. They give, when a person gives their attention, gives their time, and gives their energy to that situation, that community situation of appreciation of the art, they amplify. And it's in that moment that the art obtains its cultural significance.
So the opening of the exhibition, other events where people can come along and meet you, the artist, or if a group of people, even a person, comes into the exhibition space at Cadogo and you're there, each of those events are significant occasions. People are communicating, sharing, learning something probably about each other.
Well, they are huge community events. And this is why we still, it's such a big part of our psychological condition. And this is also why I do think a life in the arts is highly valuable, because it provides that opportunity for people to come, to step out of, you know, their normal life and to have that moment of joy, of transcendence, of letting go of the day or the week that they've had or the struggles, and to be part, to connect, to be part of something great, and to give, because if someone gives love, and that's why I always thank my art patrons. I always thank the art appreciators. If someone comes in and looks at the show and says, oh, you know, really enjoyed that and that, I thank them, because they have gifted, and the art itself and is imbued. Mm. And it's kudos, or it's status. Mm. obtains a greater, do you know what I mean? There's an accumulation there of positivity.
And if that patron, that person who appreciated the art, finishes up taking it home with them, puts it on a wall because they love it, there must be a very special feeling for you of, in that sense that you've just been describing, of success. Presumably there's some sort of umbilical cord that remains there between them and you, do you think?
Oh, without a doubt, absolutely. So, first of all, I always feel very honoured and actually quite humbled to have been gifted that place in that person's family home. That's very special to me. I certainly never take that ever, you know, other than as a huge honour. I also find that art has an enduring power. It has an enduring power. So you might go out to dinner and you enjoyed it and you might remember that, or you might have a car and then you sell it and then you get another one. I have people come back to me 20, 30 years later. I have people who say to me, this painting is for my oldest and this one is for, they have planned, they will buy three paintings because they have three children and that is who they were. It becomes part of their part of their family estate that stays intergenerational. That is the enduring power of the arts, and there's not much in our fleeting world that has that kind of level of stability and endurance.
It really is true. And I have a great grandfather who's a very good potter and painter in oils and watercolours, and he was clever with glass and all these things. And now I've got all these second cousins and we're also attached to these things.
Yes.
And we feel this old life of his in the arts, which was in England and for a while here in Western Australia. And it's such a powerful thing, the arts. Has it sort of made you a religious person, spiritual person, before or after the process?
Well, I don't... It's made me very humble because the arts is both magnificent and can be completely capricious and cruel. You know, there's a wonderful TED Talk all around the genie of... So the old word was genius comes from genie, right? So the genie, and the old people believed that, you know, I'm talking Romans and Greeks here, believed that it lived in the walls of the studio. Now, the point of that is it didn't belong to the artist. It wasn't them personally. Now, I think that lack of ego is really important to survive a life in the arts because, you know, you cannot command the genie of creativity. You cannot command that any more than you can command love. Now you fall in love with someone and you want them to love you back. Well, they might not. You can't make that happen. You can want it. All you can do in the arts, and this is what I've my conclusion after so many years, all you can do is bend to the process of the work. And if you love the work and are true to the work, that's the best you can do. Then at least you can say at the end, okay, I painted all month and nothing came from it, but I had a good month because I painted all month. But it's a funny thing that the more you love your work and you bend to it and you immerse yourself, you sacrifice yourself to the actual process of the work, it's called flow. There's a book written on it which I just love. You step into flow, that is where the magic can happen, if it will happen. But it's almost like something coming through you, and you can't really control it. It's a bit like I watch big wave surfers, because big wave surfers...
Wow, they're fantastic, aren't they?
Well, but they also must never think that they can control that wave. To survive it, they've just got to...
Got to do it.
Well, they've got to respect the wave, they've got to ride the wave, and they've got to understand that it's not about them. So they've... You know, do your apprenticeship, do your work, be fit for purpose, and then at some point, you know, you either do or do not do. And that point of whether you get on that wave or not, there was a gentleman who was a big wave surfer and they asked him how he trained. And he said, oh, I don't hold my breath or swim or anything. What I do is go to a race car track because I'm trying to train my nerve. because in that moment it's get on or don't get on. And for me as an artist, it's really important that you train your nerve. You do or you do not do. I know a big wave surfer can get drowned and an artist does, you don't. But you can face social exclusion and you can face failure and you can face the sense that your life is somehow lost because you did not achieve the masterpiece or something. So at some point for an artist also, there is a point of courage that you do or do not do.
How did you find your way to Kununurra?
Oh, well. Well, I, you know, we were, again, this do or do not do. We were in a position of great security ensconced in South Australia. My husband had a wonderful job. We had a magnificent property. And I got him to sell it and give up the job. And we, yes, I know.
Yes, you wanted to risk the failure of being an artist.
No. So we put our foot out into the unknown and went cycle touring for a year, which I call that slow travel, because you get a sense of the lay of the land and the direction of the wind when you're on a bike. And we slow travelled for a year from, started in Melbourne, and we got as far as Catherine, and Glenn said, oh, I know someone in Kununurra. Well, it's 500 kilometres. Oh, yes, we'll cycle there. So we turned left at Catherine and cycled to Kununurra, and I saw it. And the water was big and the land was amazing, and it called to me. My mother said to me that the Kimberley reminded her a lot of Nakuru of Kenya, near where I was born. So I think somehow I felt a connection to the place.
Yeah, fascinating. Mm. And that was many years ago.
Yes, 2007.
And you're both there and become citizens of Kununurra.
Yes.
Living on a houseboat on Lake Kununurra,
yes.
Water all around you. You can go up the Oar River one way. You can't go so far the other way.
No.
But what's your daily routine?
Oh, so very lucky. This is an ideal day, right?
Yes.
We're talking...
The ideal day of an artist on Lake Kununurra.
The ideal day, I would get up and do what I call a morning routine, which is...
Feed the crocodiles.
Oh, we strictly never feed the crocodiles from our boat. So all the fishes or anything that might attract the crocodiles. Yes, so in my video there is actually, I think, in one of the scenes, if you look very carefully, there's a 2-metre little guy commuting.
Oh, I saw the video, but I missed that.
Yes, I know. He's hiding under the water. It's quite... Anyway, so I would get up and I would stretch, yoga and... meditate and journal for about an hour, and then my wonderful husband will row me across to shore and I will go to the studio, and if it's a really good day I'll paint my little heart out, maybe play the piano with some friends, do some music, eat some terrific food, see some great friends, and then my wonderful husband will row me back to the boat that evening.
Does he sing Venetian arias when he's rowing the boat, or?
Oh, now that's a good point. I'll get him in training, shall I?
And in the course of that, just going back to the flow.
Yes.
Do you have to take yourself to some place physically, or put yourself in some state mentally, in order to find what your next painting is going to be about, or be?
So as I said, when I was younger, I used to paint from the head a lot, like the observation, careful observation. I think that is an extremely important part of the apprenticeship. Once you've mastered that, it's time to go to the next step. Now, this is something that there are no shortcuts, and this is why the apprenticeship to being a master painter is so long. It's 20 years full time, because you have to have that skill in your subconscious mind. You can't be thinking about it. So I'll give you an analogy. If you played complex ball sports, when you start to learn as a little kid, you've got to really keep your eye on that ball to catch it, right? And you've got to really keep your eye on that ball to kick it, yes? That's like that as an artist. You try and paint, you're thinking so hard about what your hand is doing. Now, it's not until you can subconsciously catch, you can subconsciously, you know, kick, that your brain is then freed up You put that skill into your subconscious, then your conscious mind's freed up to do the next thing, the next thing, and then the next thing. So the highest order in the sports would be to operate as a team, to know where to be, to see the game plan, to understand what the oppositions are going to do, the guy that you've marked, what he's doing, all of that. But you can't do that if you're still focusing back on catching and kicking. Now, for me, the art is the same. You must have your skills in your subconscious that you don't have to think about them. Then you can go to the next level, and so on and so on.
Jackie, it's time to bring this conversation that could go on for a long time to an end, but it's going to be fabulous to be at the opening of your exhibition, and for people to be able to know they can go down there for a couple of weeks. They can go and they can come back. They can meet you. They can perhaps pursue some of these topics of conversation with you and others. But in light of this, it's going to be really lovely to walk around and see your paintings. I imagine you feeling quite full of anticipation, if not excitement, about what's going to happen at Cadogo.
Oh, I'm so excited, and I feel very welcomed by the Fremantle community. I've got some fabulous team here of friends, and so welcoming. I just love Fremantle. It's such a marvellous city, and I really hope that the residents can come in. We are going to be there like from the 8th to the 19th, from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. There is a special day on Wednesday the 15th, from 6 p.m. till 8 p.m. will be Meet the Artist. If they want to register for that, it's free, but we're taking for, you know, catering purposes. Go to www.journeyfree.com.au.
It'll all be with a story, with this podcast.
Yes.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And good luck with the exhibition.
Thank you very much. A pleasure.